You're listening to the Newsmakers podcast from MLB.com.
Today was a day of celebration for many people in Major League Baseball who have a great affection for somebody, for a couple people who were honored. The Today's Game Committee from the Hall of Fame elected John Schuerholz to the Hall of Fame. He will be inducted in July. And I'm Allison Footer. I'm here with Mark Bowman, Phil Rogers, Tracy Ringlesby, all people who know John Schuerholz very, very well. And I just want to talk to you guys about this great honor. Anybody who knows John Schuerholz is a longtime general manager, I think the sixth general manager who will be honored by the Hall of Fame. Tracy, let's start with you just because you've known him the longest. So you go back to Kansas City. We all remember John for his work with the Braves, but really the greatness started in Kansas City, and you knew him, what, about 40 years ago? Yeah.
1976 was my first year, and that was the year he was promoted from assistant farm director to farm director of the Royals. And then I went back and covered the Royals later when he was promoted from farm director to general manager. Somehow he got a job in Atlanta without me being involved in it. But to watch John's growth, and I think what people, it's so easy to overlook because Atlanta had that success. He was either the farm director or the general manager for a Royals team that won 7 out of 10 years, which was quite a statement, and they really set a trend early on for managing payroll and signing these long-term contracts at what became a reasonable price over time, understanding the growth of the industry. And he had a relationship with a lot of the players. The biggest thing I ever saw about him, and I will go to my grave with, is he's very good at allowing the people he hires to be smarter than him. He doesn't have to be the smartest guy in the room all the time. As he said to me once, we were talking about it, if I was the smartest guy in the room, I could save a lot of money on salary. And so he respects the people that work for him, has a great way of being able to work through the ideas that they brought up. And I think that was the success that Mark seen in Atlanta. Because when you talk about 14 years in a row and only one player was on all 14 teams, you had to do some pretty good mixing and matching.
Really, Mark, let's talk about the Braves a little bit. They really were, I don't want to say they were ahead of their time, but they foresaw a lot of things in the early 90s as to what they needed to do to build a team, to be able to afford that team. They signed guys to modest contracts. But like Tracy said, I mean, John has to, he can't know everything. And so we had to bring in people who were able to see what needed to happen in the present and what needed to happen 5 years down the road. What they were able to do for a decade and a half is probably a little underappreciated because it's insane. We may never see that again to win that many consecutive titles. But just your thoughts just on John being at the forefront of all of that.
Yeah, I think a lot of John's success goes right back to him, his desire to surround himself with successful, smart people. Let's go back to 1976. Bobby Cox just ended the season as Triple-A Syracuse's manager. George Steinbrenner says, look, we're going to be seeing the Royals in the ALCS. You need to go to Kansas City for a scouting trip. So he sends Bobby. He says, hey, call this kid, you know, from the Royals, this young executive in the Royals baseball operations department named John Schuerholz. He'll take care of your tickets, your parking, all this kind of stuff. That relationship started right there. So they became friends. I actually asked John about this. They said, you know, what kind of friendship did you develop there? And he goes, well, you know, we might have done some socializing that week. And, you know, a friendship started. But it was a bond that was – linked through their friendship with Dick Houser. And, you know, the bond that they shared today stayed in contact. And then to link together in Atlanta. At first, when Stan Kasten called, Schuerholz turned him down to become the GM. 2 days later, he called back and said, you know, I've made a mistake. And he said, you know, one of the primary reasons he wanted to be in Atlanta was he, you know, the opportunity to work with Bobby Cox and also kind of take advantage of what Bobby Cox had already started as a GM, you know, because Bobby had come in there and, you know, started the rebuild back then, you know, or I don't even know if you can rebuild from where they were coming from, but at the same time, stocking that system with all the Glavins, the Smoltz, filling that, the pipeline there. And what John Schuerholz was able to do better than anybody I've ever seen is just entrust his people with their responsibilities, and you know that they would run through a wall for him is basically the way Dayton Moore describes it, because they knew that he listened to them, he believed in them, and you know that the success is right there on the wall.
Well, just to underscore that Cox relationship, after Dick Houser died from the brain tumor, he offered Cox the manager's job in Kansas City twice and got turned down. So I always kid him, the only reason he went to Atlanta was he wanted Cox to be his manager, and that's the only way he could do it.
Phil, you've covered baseball for decades and decades, and it's evolved, and front offices have evolved, and you have to evolve with the times. And I think what we've seen in kind of the modern era are there's a little bit of a separation between the old school people and the new school. And I think there's just sort of, almost from the old school people, there's a little bit of a paranoia because there's a lack of understanding about some of the things that they know. Somebody like John Schuerholz was able to evolve with the times. That's very difficult to do. You have to be a pretty special person.
Well, Allison, there's always been a difference between smart people, smarter people, and John was always on the list of smarter people. And, you know, a couple things. I don't know that when you look at, think about the Kansas City Royals, I don't know how many people look back. Younger people might not appreciate how strong that organization was. And I remember it was shocking that John Schuerholz would leave. And it was really stunning because the Royals in that era, you know, they were as good as it gets. They were, you know, if it's the modern game, the Chicago Cubs, they had used all their resources well, found the key players. And I also think in both places, in Kansas City and in Atlanta, you know, John had great scouts, and he would use them, and they would go out, they would plug the holes. I mean, they never had, the same lineups every year, year to year. They didn't really have the core four like the Yankees teams of the late 90s. But, you know, they never brought in guys that didn't contribute, and just good decisions. And I think that's where, you know, and that was really clear to me. I got to know the Royals were very good when I first got to know John, but it was really clear how smart he is, and how good his people skills are, and it was just they were ahead of their time in Kansas City. The Royals, the way they did so many different things, they were ahead of their time the way other organizations have tried to be since then. And then in Atlanta, we're able to replicate that success. And when you look back at it in 2016, I don't know that people really appreciate, Mark alluded to it, where the Braves were, you know, when Bobby Cox went there, then John Schuerholz. And, I mean, this is really like taking, you know, one of your least franchises in baseball and making it into one of the best. And it is, I'm really happy to see John rewarded for that.
Well, and the thing, when you think about it, when we talk about how John wasn't intimidated by people around him and he respected the knowledge that they had, not a lot of guys would have been comfortable going in and taking over the general manager's job when the guy that you were going to have as your manager was the man you replaced as a general manager. But that was the confidence John had in his ability to work with people and make them comfortable, that Bobby Cox could welcome him into that situation. And there was never an ego battle between either one of them.
Never. You know, and that's one thing that always amazed me. There's two different sets of relationships there in Atlanta that formed. You know, I was always amazed that Smoltz, Maddox, and Glavin competed, you know, tried to feed off each other, but I didn't sense a jealousy. In terms of with Cox and Schuerholz, there was never that battle. I mean, let's, you know, for 18 years they're together, 18 seasons they're together. You know, they work together, they win 14 consecutive division titles together. 2 years after, you know, John leaves to become the president, Frank's there. You know, obviously when Frank Wren's there, Bobby starts to have some problems. About the first week of spring training in 2009, I believe it was, Frank irked Bobby so much that he got in his car and started driving home. You know, so, you know, Bobby had all for 18 seasons of bliss with his general manager, and his last three or four seasons it wasn't that way. But that, look, general managers and managers, there are conflicts all the time, but these guys were great communicators. They had the utmost respect for each other, and it was just a great communion of minds, the baseball minds that thought alike.
And there's you're only as good as really your scouting department. I think any general manager will argue that there should be a special wing for scouts. Without the scouts, then a lot of these ball players are never discovered. And they really, everything rides on their recommendations, and their jobs really ride on this. So I would imagine, and you can speak more to this, that there was a tremendous amount of continuity inside the organization from top to bottom throughout that entire era. And so not only identifying the proper scouts, but then sticking with them. And I would think that John probably showed a lot of loyalty to these guys.
No doubt. We're going to let Tracy talk about Dick Balderson because of his relationship. That he was one of John's top scouts for a long time. But, you know, over the years, Jim Fregosi, Tim Conroy, the guys that he would entrust, that goes back to what Dayton Moore told me. You know, they always felt like their voice was heard. That doesn't mean that they're, you know, what they wanted to see happen occurred. That wasn't the decision that was made, but they had confidence that their voice was heard, and I think that's why so many scouts had such a great relationship with him, because, you know, and I'm going to let Tracy talk about Dick Balderson, because I think that's a telling as to how long a scout would stick with John because of the loyalty.
Well, I think the biggest thing that he had, too, is when you talk about guys like Guy Hansen or Jim Fregosi, you're talking about really strong personalities. He wasn't intimidated by him, and he made them feel welcome and free to open their mind. And Dick Balderson, who, it's funny because in 76, I go to cover the Royals. John gets promoted from assistant farm director to farm director, and there's this kid that used to pitch in their system that was selling insurance in Des Moines, Iowa, and he got Dick Balderson to come down and be the assistant farm director. So Dick grew up with John, went on to become a general manager in Seattle, went to the Chicago Cubs after he was let go there and ran their farm and scouting departments. Next thing you know, he's gravitated back to Atlanta, and he finishes his career working for John Schierholz. And when John retired, then Dick got closer and closer to saying, I got to retire. And Dick would talk about the great part about going into a meeting with John was you were going to be heard on what you felt. You were never going to be cut off. You were never going to be told you were wrong. But sometimes you weren't right. You know, they weren't going to necessarily do what you said. But you always felt like, A, you were allowed to present your argument. B, someone listened to it and evaluated it, and then they made the decision they felt was best for the organization. And as Dick said, when you're treated that way, you realize that it's their job to make that decision. You just appreciate the fact that they care enough about you to pay attention to what you've done. It's very hard to do because the ego doesn't always allow that to happen, and that was what was so unique about Bobby Cox and John Schierholz's relationship. Big league managers have egos. General managers have egos. These guys never worried about who got credit for whatever happened. They were worried about how do we make the Braves better. I mean, you and I went and sat with Schierholz in the postseason that one time, remember? But there wasn't a lot of me. Like he would talk about my one real regret, and it was something he had no control over, is that Bobby only won one world championship here, and I don't know what I could have done to help him win another one. It had nothing to do with the fact that he wasn't able to win, but he wanted Bobby to have that.
And Phil, sometimes I hear kind of like nightmare stories about things that happen behind the scenes and the screaming matches and the way that people talk to each other. And it would be easy to imagine that the Braves really didn't have those kinds of issues because they all respected each other.
Absolutely. And you know, some of that is the trust that builds up over the years that they were together. But I also think there was just a natural bonding because you know, Bobby Cox was a GM and then a manager. I mean, he's a guy that looked at players with a scout's eye. Not all managers do. And I think he was also a positive guy, that he would see the things guys could do. And I think a lot of managers, when you get into hard times, you know, will go to their front office and say, this guy can't do that. We need more, better this, that. If you want your better infield defense, get better players. You know, Cox didn't do that. You know, it would be, this guy's got a great arm. We've got to get him to have a little quicker release. You know, and when I think of all of those Atlanta years, I think of spring training and going into the big league camp, and I want to get a Bobby Cox interview, and I look around. You know, the team is just starting to get to the clubhouse. He was never there. He was always on the backfield. I mean, always on the backfield watching 18, 19-year-old players. And, you know, I think then because he's got the GM eyes looking at it, the scouts' eyes, then he could go back and perfectly connect with their minor league people, you know, all the way up to John Schuerholz, and they could really get a guy pointed in the right direction when he was young. And, you know, you didn't see guys would be 25 years old and they would get thrown into a new position, or, you know, I think they had a real good pipeline of figuring out, here's what a guy can do for us and here's how we'll get him there.
So you have to for sure be able to do the job and fulfill the requirements of the job. The other side of it is being a people person. And Tracy, you brought that day up. So we went to John Schuerholz's office, and it was during the postseason, and we did a story about him. And yes, he deferred everything. He wanted to more talk about his people. But then when it was over, he insisted on driving us back to the press box in a golf cart. And I don't remember if he actually did it or if he just offered it to us and we turned him down.
Yeah.
But here's one of the most accomplished people in the game of baseball. I think about that all the time. And there he was wanting to take us in a golf cart back to the press box or arrange for somebody to do that. When you meet John Schuerholz and you talk to him, and he's so respectful of every single person he meets, no matter where you are in the game, that is the other side to having the longevity that he has in the game, to be able to be in for 50 years with the stress and the pressure and the highs and the lows and the disappointments of winning or of losing. And you really have to have the kind of personality that John does to be able to do this.
And that's where the loyalty, though, came from the people that worked for him, because he treated everybody that way. I mean, Chris Rice is his secretary to this day. When he got hired from the Orioles in 1968 to come to the Expansion Royals, she was the secretary in the farm department back then that he worked for. And she's left. She opened a bath towel and blanket store in Greeley, Colorado, her hometown, for a while. She worked for the Astros as for the general manager there, worked for the Rockies for the general manager. And she always goes back to John. And now she's been retiring for 5 years, and she always says, but I can't walk away from John. As long as John needs me, I'm here. But she says, now with the new stadium, I've told him one more year I can't drive that far every day. But that, even to, like, the secretaries in the office, they have that feeling. Linda Smith from the Royals, who was with the Braves for a while and then went back to the Royals, she flew in here on her own so that she could be here today or yesterday for the announcement, because John meant that much to her. I mean, that's, so it's not just the Bobby Coxes. We're talking about the people that work in the office, the people that don't make a lot of money or get much attention. He made them feel a special part of everything too. That's why the operation works so well.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. And big congratulations to John Schuerholz for being elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame.